I'm Josh Boaz.
I'm Matt Zucker.
There are a lot of podcasts featuring top executives.
But what about the next wave of leadership?
The makers and the doers.
The ones we're all going to work for.
We wanted to meet them.
Find out their story, how they got to where they are, and what they see coming for everyone.
This is a spotlight on those on the way up.
This is Rising. This week, we're talking to Tony Frost, a partner of mine at Profit, helping lead our organization and culture practice. But I really wanted to talk to Tony because he has this amazingly diverse background across agencies, consultancies, and client side. Prior to joining Profit, Tony led Capgemini's consulting's digital strategy practice. And he's also been in-house at Pfizer, where he had a variety of roles, including technology. He's also been working in digital and innovation for years, including at Scient, where he helmed their NYC Innovation Acceleration Lab. So we thought he could tell us a thing or two about managing one's career and teaching others. He also happens to be an actor in the past, and he has a great voice for podcasting, as you'll find out. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you.
Welcome, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Josh?
Good. So, Tony, and actually, just for our listeners, I'm calling in on this podcast from Tokyo. So this is our first kind of remote recording
global
session. Yeah, we're going global, rising. Tony, so you have a kind of pretty storied background, it sounds like, from acting to consulting to in-house. Can you walk us through your journey a bit?
It's hard to do a short version of this story, but it all starts with me deciding for no good reason that I should be an actor, which was a terrible idea. I was not in any way a skilled actor. And despite being given terrible reviews in show after show, I persisted. And eventually, I got to be an effective actor. I went to undergrad at Vassar, and then I went to graduate school at Trinity Rep Conservatory, and somehow they got the bad out of me. But as that was happening, I had a dear friend who had, when you could still have one of these things, a desktop publishing business. And he seemed to have a career that looked like a rocket ship to me. Robert graduated college, he moved home with his Mac computer, and he signed up every local business to make all of their local advertising and flyers and that sort of stuff. And he moved out of his parents' house, and he had a Honda Prelude, and Robert seemed to be having a life. And so I used to sit around his house and do nothing and watch him make work for other people. And so I followed along one day as he went to drop off some flyers, and I happened to meet a woman who had a consulting business. And I'm very chatty, as you may have
noticed.
Like
a customer?
Yeah, one of his customers. Yeah. You know, we had no sense. We were 21. And so she looked at me and she said, "Are you a graphic designer?" And I smiled and I said, "Oh, no, I'm an actor." And she looked at me quizzically. She said, "Really?" And it turned out that she had a firm which specialized in organizational change, and they used theatrical techniques to kick off large-scale change management programs. And she decided that I was worth having a conversation with. And so as I continued to pursue a career as an actor, I kept going into large corporations and doing change management programs, which to me seemed like paid acting work because I pretended like I knew what I was doing. And gradually over time, when I decided to leave the theater, I actually had a lot of business contacts. And so I started originally as a headhunter and then networked my way into one of the first digital companies, originally as a recruiter. And then, because everything was so fluid and no one knew what was going on, moved over to start managing large accounts. And the next thing I knew, I was off and running. So I worked at Think New Ideas, which is one of the first large-scale pure play digital agencies.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And
I was at Blue Marble.
Oh gosh, back in the day. But you were an agency guy then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not an actor or a culture change agent or a recruiter.
No. But what I mean is steps. Blue Marble weren't a pure play digital agency, as I recall.
Sure they were.
Weren't they owned by
They were owned by an advertising agency.
Yeah, that's my point. You were an agency guy.
Real digital people.
You
don't
were
think
the,
advertising digital people are digital people.
You were the enemy. We were the upstarts. And then from there, I ended up at Scient, which was actually a systems integrator focused on e-business development. And I really learned management consulting there and learned about innovation there. And then from there, ended up with my own consulting business by mistake. And my largest clients were Pfizer and Wells Fargo and Daimler Chrysler.
When you say ended up, were all these things really just walking into it, or was any of it intentional?
what I would say is when you have no credentials, you sneak up on every job opportunity. So I used adjacency. So I had this idea that I wanted to get a job in the world. So I got a job getting people jobs because I figured out that's how you'd learn how to get a job. And then I translated myself, once I understood a little bit about the clients where I was recruiting, I translated from agency side as a recruiter to client side as a recruiter, right? So I went to Think New Ideas originally as a recruiter. And then once I was in there, I looked around, I was like, huh, those people managing client business and making websites, that looks like fun. And I found a situation where there was an accounting crisis and I volunteered to help. And the next thing I knew, people were like, oh, you know, you were actually pretty good at managing clients. And then as the headwinds started to come up against the pure play digital agencies and e-business started taking off, I networked through a friend into an interview at Cyent. And as it happened, actually, this is a weird coincidence. Someone who had been my outside external recruiter when I was at Think New Ideas in recruitment had moved in-house himself at Cyent. And when I walked in for the job interview, he was like, oh my God, I know you. And so the recruiter there was already enthusiastic about me, which was a wild coincidence. And then once I was at Cyent, I ended up with my own business in part because when Cyent came undone, all of these very talented people went and burrowed into the Fortune 500 because after 9/11, the whole e-services business market kind of came apart. And so all of these folks with MBAs and real qualifications, unlike me, all went and took jobs at big companies. And then they would call me up and say, hey, I need help. And so I started consulting for all of those folks who were my friends. And eventually Pfizer, who was one of my largest clients, sort of became enamored of me. And it was another story again about adjacency, because all my friends inside Pfizer were constantly submitting my resume for jobs, but it would never get through HR because I had no MBA. And so that was, you know, a ground level qualification. So it would go like from someone's email and then into someone else's trash folder immediately. They look at it, no MBA done. So the head of what was then called business technology and information science, what we call data science today, ended up being the beneficiary of one of the large programs that I ran there. That was a huge field force transformation. And it made one of the software, a custom piece of software that his organization developed successful, said, I'd really like to hire you into my organization. And I said, you can't do that. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, your own qualifications that you gave HR say that anyone being hired into your organization has to have a master's either in computer science or an MBA. And I have neither of those things. So people have submitted me for roles of your organizations in your specific organization, in fact, many times, and never been called for an interview. And he laughed and he said, give me your resume. And I said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to write a job description that only you can fill. And he literally wrote a job description based on my resume. It was like, no MBA, no master's in computer science, theatrical background helpful. I mean, like, it was crazy, right? And so he submitted it to HR, and then he waited like 2 days, and he was like, hey, I found the guy. And, you know, that's how a VP sort of subverted the whole system.
What's your advice out of that?
Sorry?
What's the advice out of that?
Well, I think the advice out of that is adjacency. So a lot of times young people come to me and they say, I really want to do this thing, but there's some sort of a barrier around my qualifications. And so my advice always is, well, can you get adjacent to the thing that you'd like to do? Because so often people hire people based on confidence that person can do the job. And if you are in some way in service to the organization that you'd like to help, they'll become familiar with you. So for instance, there were folks in the business technology organization at Pfizer who wanted to be marketers. I said, well, get yourself assigned to a brand marketing team and convince them that you're really a marketer who stumbled into technology and maybe you even have an MBA in marketing, right? And I find that adjacency is a great method to get to places you want to go.
What do you do, throughout your career, like to stay relevant, to learn? Do you have any tips, anything that you can share with our listeners?
I think you always have to wonder, like, what is it that could make me obsolete? So I'm now 52, and I can't tell you how 50 is such an inflection point for so many people's careers. And the number of people who I see their careers go off the rails right about the age that I am now is extraordinary. And I don't know why that is, but anybody who's had a job for like 10 years, They started when they were 40 and now they're 50. They're all targets for being replaced or being disrupted in one way or another. And so if you're not constantly looking at what's going on and thinking about how things are changing and recreating yourself, for me, I think you're next. Like I just had a conversation with someone who was telling me that her husband had been at the same company for 18 years and he's just lost his job. And that's a terrible thing. And there's also a part of me that thinks it was really dangerous to stay at a company for 18 years. Not that that didn't make sense in a different generation, but right now, the challenge is if you've been at one place for 18 years and someone else is hiring, the question is, what's the breadth of experience that you're going to bring to me? You may have a breadth of experience in one firm, but if I'm going to hire someone who knows, say, the best practices of a competitor, I probably want someone who knows the best practices of several competitors. And if they only know one competitor, then I don't want them to have built all their expertise in that one company. So right now, I feel like there's a need to rebuild yourself every 3 or 4 years in a fairly significant way. And I think that's the reason that I managed to make it through to the point where I am now.
Oh, that's great. Yes, actually, there's an interesting stat just on this, the rate of change, like in professional world, used to be basically if you stood still, you'd lose about 1% of your knowledge, your connections, your assets, your professional assets a year. Now the rate of change is 5%. Mm-hmm. So if you're standing still, you know that's the rate of degradation you're seeing. I mean, this is also said by kind of people selling executive courses and executive MBAs. So yeah, you gotta take it with a grain of salt, but that's it.
Now it's time for thank you notes, in which our guest this week, Tony, will thank someone from his career for something the person did for him, taught him, or that sticks with him to this day. Tony, who's your thank you note to?
It's hard to have just one. I only have just one.
Just one today.
I would have to say Dr. Min Bassiter. So when I was at Scient, there was a remarkable team. They have a really neat little company today called Humantific, Gary Van Patten, Elizabeth Pastor, who were hired into Scient to build the Innovation Acceleration Lab. And I worked for them. And they knew Dr. Bassiter and they brought him in as a Scient fellow. And we hired him and brought him in. And I was apprenticed to him for ultimately about 3 years between Scient and after. And Min is one of the great thinkers in what in academia is called applied creativity. Sometimes people call it creative problem solving. Over time, people have called it design thinking, and then they called it innovation. And the toolkit that Min gave me was like taking the red pill. And I have never been able to see a meeting or a client situation or a business problem without immediately turning to the tools and insights that I learned from Dr. Bassiter. So I think if there's only one person I could choose, there's many people who've done amazing things for me, but the person who really fundamentally changed my career would be Min.
Thank you, Min.
Yeah.
Thank you, Min.
But I if I could, I'd like to plug one more. And it just so happens that he's staying with me tonight. I went to college with a beautiful person named Lawler Kang. And Lawler is a very inspiring person. He had nearly almost died before I met him. He was in a high school football incident that left him comatose for weeks. He woke paralyzed and was told he would never walk again. He rehabbed himself surfing and skateboarding. And then not long after that, once he was pulled himself back together, he was hiking in the American Southwest. And a birth defect basically blew out everything below his abdomen. He was medevaced out. They cut him open from just under his neck to his navel, and they put him back together again. And so when I met him freshman year, he was this Southern California style kid with long board shorts, and he never wore a shirt. He was totally ripped. He had this massive scar, and he shook hands in this odd way with his left hand. And I just thought he was being sort of cool in a way I didn't understand because I'm from the East Coast. I didn't realize because his right hand is paralyzed. He couldn't open it up. And in college, things went wrong again, and he nearly died, which was just crazy for all of us. And he managed to graduate with us. He again recovered, pulled himself back together. And many years later, Lawler realized that he was inspiring for many people. We also worked together at Scient. And he wrote a book called Passionate Work. And in that sadly neglected book, not enough people have read it, he gives you an exercise where he says, here's an actuarial table. Here's how many weeks of life you have left. That's your founder's capital. How do you want to invest it? And he walks you through trying to figure out what's important to you. And I brought Lawler into Pfizer when I was there to run this workshop with the whole next generation of leaders. And I did it in secret because I really wanted to do this exercise properly with Lawler. And at the end of that exercise, when you get to the top, you build this whole sort of pyramid. He says, all right, you know, just let go. Don't filter in any way. What do you want it to say on your tombstone? And so I wrote, he paved the way. And I stepped back and I thought, what does that mean? That sounds really pretentious. I'm an asshole. And then I looked at the whole pyramid and I realized that I don't really have any personal ambition. I really like to help other people achieve their ambitions. And that's the thing that lights me up more than anything else. And that insight in that moment changed my career again, because I suddenly stopped trying to achieve a specific goal on a corporate ladder or any, because I didn't understand what we were supposed to do when we got in business. I wasn't prepared for it. And so suddenly I was on an elevator, I was going up, and I was kind of unhappy trying to figure out where I was supposed to go. And then I realized I don't really care what my job is as long as I'm helping other people solve problems. That's actually the thing that matters most. And whether I'm in-house in a client or I'm in a professional services firm like Profit, I've always found my way into a consulting role because ultimately I really like shaping the process by which other people get to breakthrough. And that's the thing that interests me most. And between what Min taught me in terms of problem solving and the insight I got from Lawler's exercise, those two things gave me great peace.
So I tweaked your tombstone. He paved their way.
Yes, it's really true.
So now it's time for our top picks of the week. And this can be anything, a book, an app, some kind of life hack, anything that you guys find interesting that you'd like to share with the listeners. Matt, you want to get started?
So right now I'm using Duolingo. I don't know if you all know it. It's an app that helps you improve your language skills, and it's really interactive and proven to be terrific. So I'm trying to improve my French, and I'm going to Israel. So I'm trying to improve my Hebrew. And of course, like anything, you start with good intentions and then you stop using it. And it gives you these nudges all the time to please interact with me, please interact with me, please interact with me. So it's got a good guilt signal in the app. So I recommend it.
So a crazy thing happened to me. 2 days ago, I got a message from our office manager, and she said, there's a FedEx for you. And I wasn't expecting a FedEx. I mean, normally that's like you ask someone to ship something to you. So I went up and there was a package for me from no one I'd ever heard of. And I opened it up, and this has never happened to me before, but these two guys had shipped me the first couple of chapters of their book. They had found out about me online. They had watched all the videos that Profit has of me out there, and they had realized that I would love this book. And their names are Stephen Titus Smith and David L. Markham. They're two guys out in Utah. And they've written a book called 30 Wise, which is a career guide for people who are somewhere entering that generation of 30 to 40. And their hypothesis is that this is the critical time to differentiate yourself in your career. And here's what we've learned from all of our research about how to do that. And I'm awaiting the full galleys of the book, but I got to tell you, I am so freaking jealous that I did not write this, because the first couple chapters are great. And I got to tell you, they write copy. It's like popcorn. It really crackles. Some people may be turned off by it because it's just so energetic, but I loved it and I'm dying to read the rest of the book. So that's my early breaking pick of the week.
Very good. And my pick, actually inspired by Tony's conversation earlier, is my subscription to The Economist. Mm. And I think, I read a lot of different news sources, but I feel like The Economist is the right length, right? So it's weekly. The articles are in depth enough that you can get deeper into topics and issues. And what I like about it not being kind of instant news is they get into topics and regions that you don't think about usually. Mm-hmm. Whereas kind of our typical news sources, it's all basically the same, you know, it's that same 24-hour cycle. But so It's not a new publication by any means, but I'd encourage people to go pick up a copy of The Economist, and it takes a full week to read through the whole thing. So it's just the right amount of content.
That was so cool. Thank you so much, Tony, for coming on. And thank you, Josh, for dialing in from Tokyo. I hope you'll bring back some sweet treats. But Tony, where can people find you? What's the best way for them to track you down?
I'm not sure. What for what purpose?
Are usually they inviting Twitter me out for LinkedIn. Drinks?
Yeah, I'm basically on everything. You can find me on LinkedIn, Tony Frost, and you can find me on Twitter at Tony Frost. You can find me on Insta at Tony Frost. I'm pretty much the same everywhere.
Great. Thanks, everyone. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to rate us in the Apple Store. Our theme music was created for us by Movers and Shakers, a really cool creative studio who use original music and dance to bring brands to life. It's such a fresh approach to telling a brand story, and their work really engages emotionally with consumers. In fact, they recently won a Webby. You can watch their videos for Match.com, Little Tykes, and others on their website, movershakers.co.